Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. This is where we try to take those really big ideas shaping our world and, you know, boil them down into something essential.
And today, yeah, we are diving deep. We're looking at Yuval Noah Harari's 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. It's kind of a modern manual for staying sane, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
It's less about like predicting the future and more about helping you navigate the sheer uncertainty of right now.
That uncertainty is exactly it. That's why we picked this. Harari argues that we feel lost, kind of globally disoriented, like our map just vanished.
Right, those big stories that held the 20th century together, you know, liberalism, communism, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, they're kind of dissolving. And now we're facing these huge 21st century crises with like outdated software in our heads.
Outdated operating systems, yeah.
Yeah.
So our mission today is to really get inside Harari's framework.
Exactly. And he's not offering easy fixes. You know, it's more a way to build up that mental clarity, that resilience you need to keep your own agency.
When everything else feels like it's spinning out of control. Tech, politics, the planet.
Precisely. It's a really necessary diagnostic tool, I think, for anyone feeling confused right now, which is probably most of us.
Okay, so let's talk about the source of this diagnosis, Harari. He gets called a historian, but that feels incomplete, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. He is an Israeli historian and a philosopher, too. But he's known for this really broad, interdisciplinary approach.
Right.
He looks at humanity not just through politics, but biology, economics, even information science. He's sort of a deconstructionist.
Yeah.
He looks at the stories we tell ourselves.
Like money or nations or human rights.
Yeah, the things we collectively agree to believe in so we can cooperate in huge numbers. He picks those apart.
And 21 Lessons. It fits into a bigger picture with his other books, right? A trilogy.
It really does. You can think of it like this. Sapiens was about our past, how we, this kind of insignificant ape, became dominant through those shared stories, those fictions.
Okay.
Then Homo Deus looked way into the future. Our quest for godlike powers, immortality, superintelligence, using technology.
Right, the sci-fi sounding stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And 21 Lessons pulls us right back to the present. This turbulent, confusing present, focusing on the immediate challenges that feel like they could just swamp us.
And the core idea, the premise, is that we're at this huge crossroads, facing two big revolutions merging together.
That's the absolute key. Biotechnology and information technology, and they're fusing.
Fusing. What does that actually mean in practice?
It means technology isn't just out there anymore. Tools we use. It's moving inside us. It's starting to challenge what it even means to be human.
Wow.
So the book gives you a framework, definitely not answers, he stresses that, but a way to cope when things are changing incredibly fast. And your old job, your political identity, just doesn't seem solid anymore.
Okay, let's dive into that technological challenge first, because this is where Harari gets, well, pretty specific and honestly kind of alarming. He warns about a potential useless class.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many of us get the idea that, okay, factory jobs might go, blue collar work, but he pushes it much further into like cognitive professions.
He really does.
Yeah.
He argues AI will soon be better, demonstrably better than most humans at things like synthesizing complex data, spotting patterns, making quick objective calls.
So you're talking doctors reading scans, lawyers researching cases, financial analysts.
Exactly. Radiologists, lawyers digging through precedents, market analysts. These jobs rely heavily on pattern recognition. And that's what AI is getting incredibly good at.
But hang on, couldn't AI just, you know, free up these professionals, let them do the more human stuff, the interaction? Isn't it just a productivity boost?
Well, that's the hope, isn't it? The optimistic view. But Harari's worry is the sheer speed of the disruption. It might be too fast to adapt. The danger isn't just temporary unemployment between jobs. It's potentially long-term unemployability for many.
Unemployability.
Yeah. And even if new jobs do appear, they'll likely demand constant reinvention, learning a whole new high skill set maybe every decade.
That sounds exhausting.
It's psychologically immense. Imagine having to scrap your professional identity, who you are work-wise, again and again. Societies built on the idea of a lifelong career aren't ready for that kind of pressure.
Okay, this leads us to maybe the most fundamental and chilling claim in the book. This idea that humans are hackable animals, it sounds like something out of a movie.
It does. But Harari grounds it firmly in biology. He sort of simplifies our inner world, saying our feelings, our desires, even our choices.
Yeah.
They're basically biochemical algorithms.
Algorithms, like computer code.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Think of your brain as this incredibly complex biological computer. You get stimuli inputs. These trigger chemical reactions processing.
Yeah.
And that results in a feeling or a decision, an output.
So, love, fear, voting for someone, they're all just predictable processes if you have enough data about the underlying chemistry.
That's the unsettling implication.
Yeah.
And as we get more big data, more biometrics from wearables, more sophisticated AI external systems like governments, or maybe more likely big corporations,
yeah,
they'll be able to understand, predict, and even manipulate these internal algorithms better than we understand them ourselves.
How?
Well, imagine personalized propaganda. Not just generic ads, but messages crafted to hit your specific biochemical buttons, your fears, your desires, to make you click something, buy something, or even vote a certain way.
Wow. That just, it completely undermines the whole Enlightenment idea of individual liberty, of free will, doesn't it?
Totally.
If my inner feelings can be quantified and nudged externally, then the whole basis of democracy, the voter knows best, or even capitalism, the customer's always right, starts to look incredibly shaky. Dangerously naive, as he puts it.
And that takes us straight into the next big worry. New kinds of inequality.
Yeah.
If data is the new resource, the new oil.
Then whoever owns the data and the algorithms that crunch it, they control the future.
That's the fear. Especially if that data includes our internal algorithms, our biometric responses.
And Harari takes it even further, warning about biological inequality. That sounds permanent. Horrifyingly so.
It's probably the most terrifying long-term possibility raises, yeah. If things like genetic engineering or nanomedicine or direct brain-computer interfaces become real.
And only the super rich can afford them.
Exactly. Then you could see an actual biological split in humanity. The wealthy might literally upgrade themselves into a different kind of being, a superior class. Superhumans, maybe.
While everyone else gets left behind.
Yeah. And if human equality breaks down at the biological level, well, you're talking about a caste system unlike anything we've ever seen. Potentially irreversible.
Okay, that really puts the scale of the tech threat into perspective. Let's pivot a bit. With all this tech disruption, our current political systems must be struggling to keep up, right? How does Harari address that mismatch?
Well, he argues that the main political tool we're seeing a resurgence of right now, nationalism, is just dangerously inadequate for the job.
Inadequate how? It feels like it provides comfort, community.
It does provide those things, a sense of belonging. But Harari says it's fundamentally incapable of solving the three biggest, most urgent threats we face in the 21st century.
Which he identifies as, let's remind ourselves, nuclear war, climate change, and this technological disruption we've been talking about.
Exactly. And the key thing is, these threats are all inherently global.
Right.
You can't stop climate change just within your own borders. You can't really regulate AI development effectively if it's a free-for-all elsewhere. So retreating into my country first, isolationism. Harari sees that as a recipe for collective disaster.
Like even if one country cuts emissions, it doesn't matter much if others don't cooperate.
Precisely. Nationalism often pushes for simple answers, but these problems are incredibly complex and require global teamwork.
He also has a really interesting take on terrorism, doesn't he? He frames it differently.
Yeah, instead of seeing it purely as this massive military threat, he frames it more as political theater. It's designed to provoke an overreaction.
The weapon of the weak, he calls it.
Exactly. Terrorists don't usually succeed because of their actual physical power. Statistically, you know, the risk is tiny compared to the other dangers.
Right.
They succeed by hijacking the political agenda. They poke the big state, hoping it'll overreact, maybe clamp down on civil liberties, spend trillions on security theater.
And that way they achieve political goals far beyond what their bombs could ever do.
That's the idea. It's psychological warfare primarily.
Okay, so if we look at all the political chaos, the polarization
that
connects to what he calls the crisis of truth, right? It's not just that people lie more now.
No, humans have always lived by stories, by shared fictions, as he calls them. The difference now is technology.
Also,
technology allows powerful groups to create incredibly personalized, micro-targeted narratives.
Yeah.
Think about it. Old school propaganda was broadcast. Everyone got roughly the same lie. Now, AI can look at your data profile, figure out your deepest anxieties, your biases, and send you exactly the piece of news, true or maybe false, that's perfectly designed to push your emotional buttons. maximize your outrage or your fear.
And that just shatters any sense of a shared reality, the common ground you need for debate.
Exactly. Hmm. It breaks the shared factual basis required for any kind of rational public conversation. We end up in these completely separate information bubbles.
Which also ties into his point about how even things like science fiction can mislead us. We're watching for, like, the Terminator, the big robot uprising.
Right. We expect this dramatic, conscious AI rebellion. But Harari warns the more subtle and maybe more profound threat is just the quiet efficiency of data control.
It's not necessarily evil robots wanting to kill us.
No, it's more like the sheer economic logic of the system concentrating wealth and political power into the hands of a tiny elite who own the algorithms. And the rest of us just become, well, data points, functionally marginalized without even a big fight.
Okay, let's try and pull this together. What's the core paradigm shift Harari is describing? If you had to give our listeners, say, three key takeaways.
Okay, three big ones. First, I'd say the collapse of narratives. We have to accept that our old mental maps, especially liberalism, don't have ready answers for AI and biotech. The map is broken.
Right. Old maps, new territory.
Second, the inadequacy of nationalism. Our biggest problems, climate, tech, nukes, are planetary. They demand global cooperation, but nationalism actively works against that. It's the wrong tool for the job.
Okay, that's clear.
And third, probably the most important, the urgency of self-knowledge.
Okay.
The real battleground in the 21st century isn't out there. It's inside your own mind. Your only real defense is understanding yourself.
That internal focus, that really seems to be the connecting thread through the whole book, doesn't it? This demand for personal mental flexibility, being ready to constantly reinvent yourself professionally and personally just to keep up.
Absolutely. And Harari has this knack for boiling these huge complex threads down into really memorable, almost aphoristic statements.
Yeah, let's share a few of those. They really stick with you. I think this one basically sums up the modern condition. In a world deluged by irrelevant information, clarity is power.
That just hits hard, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It completely reframes what matters. The problem isn't getting more information. We're drowning in it. The real power, the real skill, is knowing how to focus, how to filter out the noise and the manufactured outrage and see what's actually important.
Clarity is power. Okay, here's another one. Urging a kind of intellectual humility. Questions you cannot answer are usually far better for you than answers you cannot question.
Mm. That's such a vital defense against that personalized propaganda we were talking about. It's a call to resist dogma, whether it's political, religious, whatever.
So if something feels too simple, too neat, too emotionally satisfying,
that's your cue. That's when Harari says you should start asking questions. Real growth comes from wrestling with complexity, not clinging to easy certainties.
And then the big one, the ultimate call to action, maybe. To survive and flourish in the 21st century, you need to know yourself better than the algorithms that are trying to know you.
That's basically the thesis statement of the whole resilience section, isn't it? If external systems, corporations, governments can predict your desires and trigger your fears better than you can yourself, well, they essentially own your choices, your vote, your wallet, your attention.
So self-knowledge becomes like an act of resistance, an act of sovereignty.
Exactly. In the digital age, it's the ultimate defense.
Okay, so how do we actually do that? If self-observation is the key defense mechanism, what does that look like in, you know, daily life?
Harari suggests something quite practical, actually. Mindful self-observation.
Yeah.
It's about pausing. When you see that headline or that viral video or that ad that makes you feel a really strong emotion, anger, fear, even just intense agreement.
Instead of just reacting, clicking, sharing.
You pause. And you ask yourself, okay, wait, is this strong feeling genuinely mine? Is it an authentic response?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it maybe an emotional signal that's being deliberately triggered by some algorithm to manipulate me, to get my click, my attention, my money?
It's like training your brain to notice the difference between a chemical impulse and a conscious choice.
Exactly. It's about regaining control over your own internal reactions.
No, for people, you know, raising kids or involved in education, he has some pretty clear advice there too. Stop focusing so much on just cramming facts.
Yes, because facts are cheap now, and many will be outdated by the time students graduate anyway. The real priority needs to shift to what he and others call the four C's.
Which are?
Critical thinking, communication, collaboration, and creativity. These are the deeply human skills that AI, at least for now, really struggles to replicate.
And they're the skills you need for that constant adaptation, that lifelong learning the future seems to demand.
Precisely. Mental flexibility, adaptability. Those are becoming way more valuable than just knowing a lot of specific information. Facts are easy to look up. Learning how to learn is priceless.
And Harari is quite open about his own method for cultivating this kind of mental balance and clarity, right? He talks about meditation, Vipassana Dhyana meditation.
He does. And he presents it less as some kind of, you know, mystical spiritual thing and more as a very pragmatic skill, a mental training technique.
How does it help, practically speaking?
Vipassana basically teaches you to observe your own thoughts, feelings, and bodily sensations without judgment and without getting swept away by them.
Ah, so you learn to see that flash of anger from a news alert, for example.
As just a transient chemical signal,
yeah.
A temporary sensation, not necessarily the truth or something you absolutely have to act on immediately. It gives you that crucial space between stimulus and response.
It's how you stay sovereign, mentally, in a world designed to hack your reactions.
That's the idea. It's training for mental resilience.
So, if we step back for a final thought, the big shift Harari is pointing to. It's moving away from seeking comforting certainty, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's about getting better at asking questions, embracing complexity, and developing this kind of adaptive resilience. He implies that consciousness itself and wisdom, not just raw information, are actually humanity's most precious and maybe most endangered resources right now.
Mm.
The challenges we're facing in this century, they really are unprecedented. And maybe the greatest danger isn't, you know, killer robots.
But us, retreating into our tribes, into nationalism, just when we most desperately need to cooperate globally.
That seems to be his core warning. The work required isn't just technological or political. It's about continuous learning, intellectual humility, and understanding ourselves.
Which brings us right back to that central idea. The most important battle really is the internal one. If you don't make the effort to know your own mind, the algorithms will happily map it out for you.
And make your decisions for you.
Which isn't just the end of your personal freedom. It's potentially the end of any kind of effective democracy, too. That's the real work, isn't it? Understanding your own mind before technology understands it better than you do. That's the path to thriving, or maybe just surviving, the 21st century.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.